The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy
with Nissan
on News Talk.
Now, Dublin Airport. Huge reaction, and some of it, some fairly horrendous experiences from people trying to get through the airport. People suggesting that it's down to too many experienced staff being let go during COVID, and then lots of people thinking they could show up and get through if they arrived early. A lot of people saying things like, can the DAA actually explain what went wrong? Were too many staff out sick? What's the actual issue? If we knew that, then it would at least be reassuring for people that they're on top of things. But I haven't heard that yet, says the text. Not very reassuring, and I'm travelling out on Saturday morning. And then one example of what people are experiencing. Anton, stressful day yesterday seeing the chaotic scenes unfold at Dublin Airport. Drove from Donegal last night at 10:30 p.m. overnight to drop my brother, his wife and two kids to Dublin Airport. Wife and kids went on ahead through security. We had to wait around for the bag drop to open and then he got swallowed up in the queues. It got very busy very quickly. Three security bays open out of 15 at the time. Eventually he got through security and then found his wife and kids at 3:30 a.m. Not one bit ashamed that I got them there at 1:15 a.m. for a 6:15 a.m. flight, 5 hours ahead of their scheduled departure. You cannot blame people for arriving so early, particularly those travelling from far outside Dublin. And thankfully, my family are now at their resort outside Barcelona. And that experience is far from unique. It is shared by many people, including Ralph Curry, who yesterday had the experience of attempting to get on a plane that he never reached. Good afternoon, Ralph.
Good afternoon. How are you?
Good. Can you fill us in on your experience trying to get through the airport?
Yeah, well, my experience is not dissimilar to your other listener. I had a 10 past 10 flight yesterday morning and I arrived just after 7 o'clock. As per the guidelines and as you know, what is reasonable, and I was still outside the front gate of the terminal, at the front doors of the terminal, when my flight took off at 10 past 10. I hadn't made any progress into the building, and at that point I decided that that was enough, and extracted myself from the queue.
So you stood in a queue at dawn for 3 hours, and never once made it inside the terminal at all.
No, the queue, as many will know now, the queue, you had to essentially go up the hill. So the drop-off point is all cordoned off, and you go up the hill to join the queue, to come back down the hill and go back up the queue, but go back up the hill. Then you get into a sort of traffic or a queue management system that takes you back and forward, right in front of the actual doors of the terminal. Now, at that point, you start getting a little bit of hearsay from the door. That's it. And at that point, you know, you... with the surge and the sort of the frustration sort of culminated amongst passengers. At that point, you know, it was 10 past 10 for me, and I knew I'd missed my flight, so I hadn't actually got into the airport.
Had you checked the app, because they have an app which sometimes updates and sometimes didn't? So did you know that you were facing a 3-hour queue?
Yeah, I did. You know, but you still look at the guidelines and you think, I'll give myself a little bit of leeway here. There's just disbelief in the queues. I mean, you follow the guidelines. Even now, the guidelines will tell you 2.5 hours. So, and they don't want you to come before the 2.5 hours because that just adds to the traffic. So the messaging at the minute is conflicting and is not clear at this time. And if the airport were to guarantee me my flight after 2.5 hours of arrival, then that's great. But yesterday, that was not the case. And at 9:45, when I knew I'd pretty much missed my flight, the message came from the front door via, you know, it's a third hand, fourth hand, that if your flight was before 11:45, you wouldn't be allowed into the terminal. So if I put that together, that's essentially me arriving up to 5 hours before my flight and not making the flight. So the messaging is poor, and the communication over the public address system was even worse. You know, they were still referring to outdated pickup points for cars and things like this, and you know, someone hadn't thought to update that to real time information, which was pretty key in this.
But did they have people in uniform or high vis vests going up and down the queue, explaining the situation, telling people what they faced, any of that kind of thing?
Well, they had a number of high-vis vests. Now, they were critical turning points just to literally manage the queue. They, really didn't know what was going on. You know, there was no sort of management coming in and out of the airport. We did see one guy in a shirt and tie come out, but he very quickly sort of worked out that this wasn't the place to be and got back in before he got too much hassle. So, but there was no sort of megaphone or sort of loudspeaker or anyone showing any sort of leadership and saying, right, guys, you know, we have a situation here. We need your assistance to make this work. And, you know, in any sort of communication in a crisis situation, you tell the truth, you tell it often, and you manage expectations, and, you know, loud and clear. And yesterday, I just don't think airport senior management had any, you know, clue how to articulate that message to their passengers or potential passengers, and that's what led to the frustrations and the scenes.
And what were the scenes? Give us a sense of the frustrations that you saw. Did it bubble over?
Well, I actually think that the queue and the people involved were extremely compliant. I mean, there was a disbelief. There was no chatter in the queue. It was all, you know, I think people were pretty staggered at the whole situation. So the frustration sort of boiled over when you got to the top of the queue management system, where a lady at the front gate was sort of holding the doors essentially and shouting, "If you don't get back, I'm going to shut the doors." And this happened over and over and over. And all of a sudden, you know, there was a call for a certain flight. You know, anyone going to Turkey, for example, or I think there was a flight to Istanbul. And of course, that's with everyone with a ticket. We started waving the ticket and surging towards the door. So these messages were coming back third and fourth hand, and it led to the frustration again, where people, you know, was that my flight or was that whose flight was that? And then people started to surge towards the door and break through the barriers and through the tape. And it was pretty chaotic. And I saw some young kids in hysterics getting pulled out of the crowd, having clearly missed their flight, and their parents just decided to extract them out of the chaos. And you know, an elderly lady stood beside me and just burst into tears when she realised her flight had just taken off and she hadn't seen her daughter, you know, before COVID. So, yeah, you know, there's an emotional cost here as well, on top of the financial cost, which is, I suppose, yet to be decided as well by the airport.
And if you look at the way you break it down, you talked about the 3-hour delays and missing the flight. Well, that's the first problem. Second problem, the level of communication while you are there in the queue and the information that you're given so that you know what you're facing into. Third thing then is, what has Dublin Airport done by way of compensation or apology or further contact? Have they made contact with you after any of this experience?
No, and I wouldn't expect them to do that. I mean, they're in crisis management, you know, focus now. That is, you know, at this point, they're just dealing with the fires at the minute, you know. The aftermath will come. Well, I hope it comes. So, you know, I haven't made phone calls to Ryanair because, at the end of the day, they'll say that they are powerless here anyway. I'm rebooked to go back out on Wednesday. Hopefully, go back out on Wednesday. So, all I'm going to do is clutter the airways at this point. And I'm sure the management team at the airport are just grappling with the situation. So, you know, again, it's about communication, and I'll wait my time until this calms down before I start to make phone calls and kick up a bit of a fuss. But, you know, clearly Ryanair had nothing to do with this. This is or the other operators. I mentioned Ryanair.
But that throws you to some extent on their mercy. I mean, and whatever about for a short haul or a low fares price, this could be people who have long haul international flights for multiple people. There could be thousands of euro at risk. And they're now, I mean, the airlines are not beholden to say, well, the airport made a mess of it, so we'll refund you, are they?
No, again, I called Ryanair yesterday just in the hope that I would reschedule. But as it happens, I couldn't actually jump into any particular flights yesterday anyway. And I'm now sort of resigned to going out Wednesday because I can't move today for various reasons. And I've got the stuff on tomorrow. So, but it's not only the cost. I mean, my cost is not a low fare cost. I'll say that as well. But it's the other cost as well. You know, I have 3 nights of accommodation. You know, I have journey there and back. I have rental cars that I cancelled. All this stuff adds up, and it's just not the flight. So I have no doubt that Dublin Airport will make it as complicated and as turgid as they possibly can to recoup any of this money. You know, I am into thousands here, without a doubt, and I will not be alone here. The people, you know, families, for example, will be into that same sort of money. No doubt about it. Well, and they've got follow-on connection flights as well for those on long haul. So it is extremely frustrated, and I do believe this could have been and should have been avoided through a little bit of contingency planning. I saw something posted on by the airport talking about contingency planning. We've got contingency plans in place, and I think one of them was that there were just a few people outside the airport. That's not a contingency plan. That is a reaction to the inability to solve the problem in place.
Well, Ralph, your line is starting to break up there, so I think this is where we leave it. But fair play to you for being as zen as you have been through the experience and also through the aftermath that you're facing into in terms of recouping some of the thousands that you are owed. The other people, of course, in all this who are having a fairly fraught time are the staff who are there on the front lines. And Jerry Brennan is with us. He's from SIPTO and he represents workers at the airport. For the workers who are there, Jerry, this has to be a nightmare dealing with thousands of deeply frustrated and angry passengers.
Yes, absolutely, Anton. And I can't stress how difficult it is for the staff. They're undermanned, so there aren't sufficient people to open all of the lanes and have it at the efficient level that we would have seen prior to the pandemic in 2019. So we're operating at reduced levels of staff. So those people are carrying the entire load and they want to get people through. They want to get the passengers through. There has been quite a lot of heated moments. And this has gone back over several months. We're going back to prior to Christmas. We're going back to December. So this group of staff and their colleagues have been under this constant pressure.
And can you explain that, Jerry? Because it's one of the things that we just got a text by way of example from somebody who's saying, just arrived, where is it? Yeah, just arrived Dublin Airport Terminal 2 for my flight, 3 hours in advance, no queue whatsoever for security or passport control. It is the unpredictability and inconsistency which is so frustrating. Do you have, and are your members, are they able to explain how it is that on some weeks everything works fine and then it turns into mayhem?
What we have seen, so look, the travel is seasonal. And what we have seen is that things are starting to increase now in passenger numbers. Passenger numbers are almost back to those that we experienced in 2019. So it's returned very, very quickly. I don't believe that the DAA were prepared for this. There were too many people let go. What we are seeing is greater numbers travelling at the weekend than was previously the experience. So higher numbers travelling, so Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday are extremely busy. And it's just so difficult to cope. The staff are really and truly at breaking point. And I'm very proud of the job that they're doing in extremely difficult circumstances, but they cannot continue to operate under these levels of stress.
Have you any sense from the members that you've spoken to in Dublin Airport whether the level of staffing present over the weekend was what was expected to be there, or was there an issue with unexpected absenteeism? In other words, do they think people didn't show up when they should have?
If people didn't show up, and I've heard this mentioned already a couple of times, if people were out sick, I'm not surprised. The stress levels that they've been operating under for the last 6 months are phenomenal. Those people that may have been out sick would be out sick with a certified doctor's letter. But this is not the reason that people did not get away for their flights at the weekend. These people have put their shoulder to the wheel wholeheartedly and willingly for the last 6 months. And it's not just the security staff. There is staff being brought from other areas. So from the cleaning section, staff are being brought in to give support to the security operation to get people through as quickly as possible. And that impacts then on them in turn, because while they're supporting the security element of it to get people through, their own work is not being done.
But yeah, and believe it or not, we're already receiving comments, Jerry, on that the general standards across the airport are getting ropier and ropier. And we'll talk more about that later on in the programme. Jerry, thank you very much for coming on this. Jerry Brennan, who's from SIPTO, he represents workers there in Dublin Airport. And just after 5 o'clock, we'll be talking to Kieran O'Donnell, who is chair of the Oireachtas Transport Committee, about what's going on at the airport and what, if anything, can be done about it. Now, more texts coming in. Anton, why can't army personnel who are already security vetted be used to supplement security staff at Dublin Airport? Well, I put that question to Graham McQueen, the spokesperson for Dublin Airport, a number of weeks ago, and his response was that it wasn't an army issue and that the army weren't trained to do it. But, I mean, I cast my mind back to the days of, remember the deregulation of the aviation industry in the United States when the air traffic controllers went on strike and Ronald Reagan was able, not without downside, but was able to replace them with army air traffic controllers. Surely it can't be beyond the grips of trained army personnel to get people through security. Anyway, Dublin Airport has said that it wasn't going to work for them. Another, get the army in. They're already security vetted. They should be used to supplement staff at security. Another, can the DAA not just set up lanes for departure on a 30-minute basis, i.e. lanes for flights only departing from 9 to 9.30, then 9.30 to 10, and so on. Make it very clear so that if you jump the queue, you are told to go to your original flight and just begin queuing again. Well, as I say, we'll be talking to Kieran O'Donnell later on, chair of the Eurythys Transport Committee, to see if there is any political pressure that can be brought to bear or if this is just a matter of flipping a coin and hoping that you're in the lucky window when things are relatively well organised. In court today, the Special Criminal Court returned a verdict in respect of the case of Lisa Smith, the former Irish soldier who had been accused of sending money to finance terrorism and accused of being a member of the unlawful terrorist group, the so-called Islamic State. And our News Talk Courts correspondent, Frank Graney, has been covering the case. Frank, what came out of the verdict today?
Well, in relation to the first charge that you mentioned there, that of attempting to finance terrorism, to funding ISIS, she was acquitted of that charge. And this was an accusation that she had tried to send €800 by Western Union transfer to a known ISIS fighter and recruiter, a man called Amir al-Khattab, also known as John Georgelas. And this was in May of 2015. And in order to secure a safe conviction in relation to that charge, the prosecution had to convince the judges beyond a reasonable doubt that Lisa Smith sent that money knowing and intending for it to be used to help ISIS. The defence argued there was no proof that she knew that John Georgelas would use this money to further the interests of ISIS. And they also claimed that the other side hadn't proved that he was even a member of ISIS or that he was even in ISIS-controlled territory at the time of the alleged payment. The judges said that there was no doubt that this man was a member of the terrorist organisation. They said it wasn't relevant whether or not he was specifically within its territory at the time, but crucially, they couldn't rule out the possibility that Lisa Smith had an alternative, innocent reason for sending that money, so she was acquitted on that charge. Now, as you mentioned, Anton, this trial was conducted before the Special Criminal Court. There are no juries considering evidence in the Special Criminal Court. The evidence was considered by three judges. It took an hour and a half for the judges to outline the reasoning behind their ruling today. And at the very beginning, Lisa Smith was almost lulled into a false sense of security because very quickly, very early on, she would have known that she was acquitted of that charge. They then spent the guts of the next hour explaining the reasoning behind their decision in relation to the membership charge before she ultimately learned her fate. And aside from, it wasn't straightforward because aside from the testimony of a witness called Tanya Joya, a former ISIS bride who gave evidence during the trial, she was once married to that guy who radicalized Lisa online. There was no real direct evidence linking her to the terror group. All of the evidence was circumstantial, but its combined weight was enough to convince the judges of her guilt. So during the trial, we heard that Lisa had converted to Islam while in the Irish army. In fact, that's the main reason she left the defence forces. We heard that she had requested to wear a hijab while on duty, but her application was refused. In any event, being a part of any army or showing any nationalism for a state other than the Islamic State would have gone against her beliefs. That was around 2011, Anton. She became radicalised in the years that followed, all online through Facebook and a more secure platform called Telegram. Now, for context, in 2014, this was 3 years after she left the Irish Defence Forces, the then leader of ISIS, a man called Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, declared himself to be an Islamic caliph, and in June of that year, he announced the establishment of a caliphate or an Islamic state and called on his followers to migrate there. Lisa Smith did so in October 2015. She went to ISIS-controlled territory in Syria, but she claimed her reason for going and staying there for 4 years was totally innocent, in that she thought she was answering a legitimate religious calling, and she feared the consequences of hellfire if she didn't comply. The prosecution, on the other hand, argued that by answering that call, Lisa Smith essentially enveloped herself in the black flag of ISIS. They portrayed her as someone who wasn't as naive and as innocent as she was making herself out to be.
Indeed. Did so convincingly, as far as the judges in the Special Criminal Court would be concerned. Briefly, Frank, what's the implications in terms of the sentence that she is likely looking at?
Well, if she had been convicted of the charge of attempting to finance terrorism, that has a maximum penalty of 20 years in prison. So clearly she was acquitted of that. She was cleared of that charge. That's no longer on the table. The maximum penalty, as far as I can see, in relation to membership of ISIS is 2 years in prison. She has been on bail throughout these proceedings. That continues, and she's back in court on the 11th of July for her sentence hearing.
Frank, as always, thank you very much. That is News Talk Courts correspondent Frank Graney. Coming up, we will be talking to Henry McKean about the humble potato.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With Nissan.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.